Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Lover's Walk in Hyde Park, W2. One street west of the last sighting alive of Ruby Bolton. A short walk southwest of the last night of fun by the Bloody Butler. One gate down from the suicide and murder of the former lovers Julia Mangan and Robert Williams. And in another odd mirror of both tragic cases, the death pact of a couple who failed to see. Coming soon to Murder Mile. As an ill-defined bridle way off the main walkway around the eastern edge of Hyde Park, it's strange that a place so littered with death is still called Lover's Walk. And yet this is where they stroll. You'll see all types of couples here, whether it's the old ones sweetly holding hands, the young ones sucking face, the new ones bonking and banging their bits together like they'll win a prize if they erase each other's genitals. And then there's the ones with the sprogs, who look as ravaged as a Guantanamo Bay prisoner. Having been waterboarded by urine, tortured by a tiny tot with lungs like a pig with piles, and imprisoned in a Peppa Pig-covered hell, they'll confess to literally anything in return for a 5-minute nap, a half pint with a pal, and a conversation which doesn't involve stains, fluids, or orifices. For love to last, it needs to be built on a strong foundation of trust, time, and friendship. Sadly, too many loves are doomed to failure as being too hasty to believe that they've met the one and fearing that if they don't get hitched this second, that their lover for life will leave them forever. So many relationships end in breakup, separation and divorces, and occasionally they end in death. Just shy of midnight, on Wednesday the 26th of August 1942, across a wooden bench on Lover's Walk, sat 44-year-old Gladys Wilson and her lover, 28-year-old Second Lieutenant Ronald Couras. Both being married to others, who the war had split apart, neither Gladys nor Ronnie had planned to have affairs. As like so many others, they were just seeking a little affection during the turbulent time of loss and grief. After 10 days of romance, being sat on a bench holding hands, they both knew their relationship was to end. but whereas she would see their love as simply fleeting. For him, their love was to last forever. My name is Michael. I am your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 192. I love him, but... To many, it may seem easy to condemn these two as nothing but common cheats. A morally loose pair of lascivious lushes who slipped their marital vows before God as easily as they slipped inside a seedy bed of lust to fondle and fornicate. But this is not a story about a tawdry affair. This is a tale about two good people lost amidst the horrors of war, who, like so many others, was simply seeking affection. Gladys Maud Pearson was born in and around Fulham in 1898. She would live to the age of 44, but blessed with an ageless face, old-fashioned morals, and a youthful heart. The newspaper stated that she was somewhere between 30 and 50, which may have made her bristle, blush, or even chuckle. The first decades of the 20th century were a time of hardship and grief, as the world was hit by an onslaught of tragedy. The First World War, Spanish flu, influenza, and the Great Depression had left billions broke, lost, and bereft, with their lives only held together by the strength of their family's love. The Pearsons were one such family hit hard by grief. As with her mother Maud, left a grieving widow with two young children to feed. Gladys and her younger brother Cyril were raised in the middle class affluence of Kingston, with Uncle William and Auntie Kate. Tragedy aside, their childhood was loving. So it's no surprise that Gladys sought out any hint of affection, worried that any love she was given could easily be her last. Gladys was a woman who loved to be loved, and who doesn't? And although remarkably youthful, she was as ordinary as most. With a slim build, short brown hair and pale skin. She had lips that longed to be kissed, a hand which ached to be held, and a set of chestnut eyes which cried out for someone special to mend a broken heart. Keen to rebuild her life and to find love again. In 1916, her mother Maud married William Crawley, a respected wool merchant who was good, decent, and kind. And they remained together until their deaths in their 70s and their 80s. According to those who knew her, Gladys was a solid woman. She was reliable and caring. She was warm and big-hearted. And a woman who needed to be loved and to love those who needed to be loved. As an average woman with an ordinary life, we know little of her circumstances before the day it ended. Married in her early 20s, Gladys Wilson, as she became, found happiness with a man she loved, and together in a cozy home, they had a son who they nicknamed Budge. Her life was simple, but good. As a romantic, throughout her life, she kept a diary in which she jotted down everything. From those wondrous moments which made her the woman she was, to her most intimate of thoughts. Whether her fears and foibles, issues or aches, loves and losses. being so private, she wasn't the type to gossip about her worries. But in her diary, she would spill her heart. On Tuesday the 25th of August 1942, the day before she died, in her diary, she would commit to paper some of the most heartbreaking and tragic words this woman would ever write. Unaware, it would be some of her last. It was a simple sentence, comprised of just 9 words. The first 4 of which were, "I love him, but..." September 1939 saw the start of a war which ripped loved ones apart in a way which had never been seen on this scale before. The Second World War was a global conflict which wouldn't leave a single family untouched by grief, displaced by tyranny, bombed to oblivion, evacuated for safety, or ordered to fight. For Gladys, as with so many wives and mothers, with her loving husband and her only child conscripted and shipped overseas, she had gone from being a woman of purpose to being a lost, lonely lady rattling around an empty house with no one to care for. As if she was already bereaved, this once bustling home of her beloved family now hung with the eerie ghosts of their presence, their photographs, their clothes, and even their smell. Only now, this woman who loved to be loved was all alone. But as the war dragged on, from a skirmish it was said would be done by Christmas, to a fight with no end in sight, Gladys did as most women did, and knuckled down to her life and her work. In 1940, she moved in with her mother and stepfather, and being conscripted into the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry, later renamed the Women's Transport Service. As a skilled truck driver and motorbike rider, Gladys served her country, shuttling the injured on the front lines of North France, Norway, and East Scotland. With her beloved boys far from home, the war had proven a distraction from the gaping hole in Gladys's heart. Work had given her a purpose and a focus. But what she needed most was affection. Thanks to the stories we've been told, we have a rose-tinted view of how the soldiers who fought and their sweethearts back home held each other's pictures to their hearts and remained faithful forever. War pushed ordinary people to the brink, not just of their safety and sanity, but also of their love. By 1942, 3 years into the war, Britain had taken a turn for the worst. As the Luftwaffe's bombers ravaged the skies, Nazi hordes perched on the shores, and so thick and fast were our losses that even Dunkirk would be rewritten forever as a success of our British pluck, rather than a failure of our forces. People were rightfully in fear. As with no end in sight, those whose anthem claimed, "We shall never be slaves," look likely to lose. Before war had begun, the people needed hope and love. In the first few months of the war, the marriage rate in Britain skyrocketed by 250%. with many marrying those they barely knew, to fulfill a dream before they died, and with some even getting wed and having a baby to avoid conscription. Marriage requires a strong foundation to survive so many months or years apart. But having hastily committed to a life of love with a stranger they were little more than smitten by. In 1939, the divorce rate was 1 in 6. By 1946, it had risen to 1 in 4. In terms of statistics, the interwar years were chaotic. Owing to the mass slaughter, 1941-42 was the only year this century where the death rate outweighed the birth rate. But with so many parents widowed and too many marriages over, the greatest victim of this rush to find love was the children. As by 1946, adoption had risen and peaked. It's impossible to say how many children were put up for adoption, having been born out of wedlock, or made by mistake as a brief dalliance between two lonely people who were simply looking for affection. But this is not to shame them, as what happened, happened. In the turbulent time of war, as everyone drowned in a sea of misery and death, the only antidote was love. For some, that was sex. But for others, it was those special things they missed. A little kiss, a warm hug, a lingering smile, or holding hands. Gladys and Ronnie were just two regular people, married to others but parted by the war, who found love in each other's arms and who knew, when all of this was over, it would never be spoken of again. But what began as a bit of fun soon blossomed into a love that they could no longer control. So besotted was Ronnie that she became his one true love. So smitten was Gladys that in her diary she would write 4 words about the man she had fallen for. I love him, but... Ronald Kouros was a 28-year-old second lieutenant in the Polish Army Corps. With his homeland smashed and its military shattered within the first month of the war by a dual invasion by Germany and Russia, as millions were displaced, 80,000 soldiers went into exile and formed the 1st Polish Corps. Formed in September 1940, 14,500 soldiers were there to protect a 200-kilometre stretch of the Scottish shore between the Firth of Forth, north of Edinburgh, to Montrose, south of Aberdeen, as Norway had fallen to the Nazis. Having built sea defences and gun batteries to repel any invasion, the 1st Polish Corps were billeted in the small town of Cooper in Fife, which for the next few years would become their temporary home. For 2nd Lieutenant Kouros, known as Ronnie, as welcoming as the locals were to these visitors from a foreign land, their kindness could never fully erase the losses that they felt. Of the country they had lost, of the lives they had left behind, and of the family and friends they may never see again. Through the fate of being a soldier, Ronnie had survived. But being ordinary civilians, he had no idea if his wife or children had lived. With millions displaced and dead, he had no way to contact them and no knowledge if they even knew where he was, in an unwinnable war which the Allies were losing. 3 years had passed in a flash. But to those still grieving, it felt like a lifetime. Cooper was a nice place. It was safe and friendly. To make those lost souls feel at home, Polish delicacies were cooked. Strong beer was never in short supply. And as a reminder of the land they were fighting for, from the Tower of the Corn Exchange, each day a bugler played the St. Mary's Call of Krakow in tribute to a lone sentry who, while sounding the invasion alarm in 1241, was killed mid-note. As welcoming as the town was, Ronnie struggled to survive in this strange land so far from home. His work had kept him busy, and his friends had made him smile. But what he missed most was love. As an ambulance driver for the Women's Transport Service, it was sheer coincidence that Gladys was billeted at Lodge 19 at 72 Bonnygate in Cooper, barely half a mile from Ronnie's barracks. With her diary lost to the mists of time, we shall never know how Ronnie and Gladys met. Perhaps being injured, as a mix of Florence Nightingale and Stirling Moss, maybe Gladys had rescued Ronnie, and the two got chatting over some surgical swabs and the smell of iodine. Maybe they shared a kiss being hunkered down in a bunker on manoeuvres. Or maybe, needing to kick off their boots after a hard day at work, these two lonely people caught each other's eyes over a pint. It began as a friendship. Two lovers with heavy hearts, finding solace in each other's company. Being an easy remedy for their grief and a distraction for their pain. All they wanted was to feel loved again. To neither Gladys nor Ronnie, it wouldn't have seemed like they were engaged in an illicit affair, as all they were doing was chatting, smiling, and laughing. And maybe, having taken a long walk in the dunes, holding hands and sharing a long lingering silence as the waves broke, they kissed for the first time, and they knew they were in love. It was wrong, and they would have known it. But being so many miles and years apart from their loved ones, although absence makes the heart grow fonder, it's hard to love a memory as it fades every day. Only this was a love they knew would never last. June 1942. The outcome of the war hung on a knife edge, as the Battle of Midway had proved a turning point in the Pacific. Tobruk was captured in a defeat that Churchill called a disgrace, and the first reports had filtered back that gas was being used in concentration camps to exterminate the Jews. Horror was everywhere. But for Ronnie and Gladys, their hearts were broken for reasons closer to home. Gladys was no longer an ambulance driver in Cooper. She had been requisitioned back to London. London was her home. Cooper was his. And with both ordered to serve their country as and when their superiors decreed, war had ripped them from their loved ones once before. And now it had, once again. Being 420 miles apart, with a limited train network and issued only a few days' leave per year. They saw each other as often as they could, but with the long distance taking up a full day, it was never enough. To fill the void of loss and loneliness, they wrote as often as they could. But even a scented envelope, a wallet-sized snapshot, and a few handwritten pages full of words of longing and dreams of what may be could never repair this new hole which had ripped into their hearts. It's uncertain why, whether an order or an opportunity, but Gladys applied for a job in the Mechanized Transport Corps. In need of skilled drivers, the MTC drove dignitaries of foreign and British agencies. They shuttled SEO agents to airfields. And as Gladys had done, they drove ambulances into war zones in Syria, Egypt, and Palestine, where Gladys's husband and son were based. Once again, for this brave and selfless woman, it was a chance to serve her country and to rekindle her life with the loved ones she had lost so long ago. Having been successful in her interview, Gladys would initially be posted in the northern city of Leeds, with her attachment beginning at the end of August. On Friday the 15th of August 1942, issued a 72-hour pass to see his beloved in London, Ronnie booked a room at a boarding house at 13 Coliseum Terrace, just to the side of Baker Street, Regent's Park. Across this long weekend of love, they packed in as much as any couple could. They dined over candlelit dinners. They took in a West End show, and they walked hand in hand seeing the sights. But unable to take their eyes off each other, they knew it would be for the last time. With his 72-hour leave almost up, Sunday the 17th of August was to be their last day together. But unable to part, Ronnie did the unthinkable, and risking 2 years in prison, he went absent without leave. Classed as a criminal, and with his career in jeopardy, this secret couple who had signed in under the assumed name of Mr. and Mrs. Gurris laid low, kept quiet, and spent much of their time in each other's arms, knowing that their brief relationship was coming to an end. On Sunday the 23rd of August, 1 week before she was due to start her new job, Ronnie met Gladys's mother, where they chatted over tea and cake. Although it's uncertain if Gladys introduced him as a friend or a boyfriend. With their time almost up and their savings almost spent, by the Tuesday, Gladys and Ronnie had checked out of the boarding house. Later found upon their person, they had both written passages in their diaries that day. Although only part of it was found, Ronnie's was tragic and paranoid. It read, "We are absolutely two broken people. She give up always everything for me. Also, her life." Whereas Gladys's last entry in her diary, addressed to her mum, was less of a suicide note, but was more of a last will and testament, which spoke of her fears she could never say in words. It read, "To my mother, just in case anything happens to me today, Ronnie is still here. He should have returned yesterday, but says he cannot live without me in the awful place where his regiment is. I hope everything will be all right, but Ronnie is in a terrible state about going back. We have had a wonderful leave together, but he threatens all the time to kill himself and me. And following her tragic premonition, she wrote the most heartbreaking words this lonely woman would ever write. I love him, but I don't want to die. On Wednesday the 26th of August 1942, just before midnight, Ronnie and Gladys walked, as many couples do, along the tree-lined seclusion of Lover's Walk in Hyde Park. With her bags packed, her lodging booked, and a new job awaiting her in Leeds, she had told her mother, "I won't be late." But she was. After 10 days of romance, being sat holding hands, they both knew their relationship was to end. But whereas she would see their love as fleeting, a little affection to repair her lonely heart, for him, their love was to last forever, as this would be their last goodbye. Hearing the shots, at roughly 11:40 p.m, PCs Heath and Gillespie were on duty in Hyde Park when they heard 3 shots and ran in the direction. 100 yards west of Stanhope Gate, across a wooden bench on Lover's Walk, they found a uniformed soldier and a woman in her civvies, collapsed and bleeding. With 2 bullet wounds to her left temple, 1 behind his right ear, and an Army issue Smith & Wesson .38 caliber revolver in his right hand, with 3 of 6 rounds spent. Discovering their diaries upon their person, it was no mystery to the officers what had happened, as death often permeates this path. With Gladys sprawled across his chest, and with no defensive wounds, in a moment of surprise, he had shot her in the head while she was distracted by something else. Clutching his dying lover to his body, this couple, who were not to be, would die in each other's arms, whether she wanted to or not. As the ambulance arrived, it proved to be a miracle that Gladys had clung on to a sliver of life. But by the time she had arrived at nearby St. George's Hospital, the doctor declared her life as extinct. An inquest was held at Westminster Coroner's Court, concluded without the jury retiring. It was determined that Second Lieutenant Ronald Couras had murdered Gladys Wilson and that he had committed suicide whilst of unsound mind. Giving evidence, Gladys's brother Cyril would state, she would have been the last person in the world to take her own life. It's tragic that, as a woman who loved to be loved, the war had driven Gladys to find affection in the arms of another man. But instead of finding warmth, she found only death.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Whoa. There we go. There we go, folks. A nice happy one. Oh, happy days. Happy days. Oh, a love story. Well, there you go. What do you expect? What do you expect from love stories? They're never... That's the thing, isn't it? If you get a love story and the love story is all lovey-dovey and people are kissing each other and it's all shit like that, it's just boring. Whereas when you get a classic love story where people end up dead, you go, oh, that was true love, isn't it? Yeah. Well, one of my favourite films, I hate to say it, but it is one of my favourite films, is Brief Encounter. Yeah, I think I was off work one day many, many, many years ago. It was on the BBC, it was on in the mid-afternoon. I didn't fancy watching anything on telly, and I thought, well, it's a classic. I should really watch it. I'm going to open some windows. And I blubbed all the way through it. Even though it was Noel Coward and all that, absolutely darling, all that shite. God, it was good. I really enjoyed it. So I happily will watch Brief Encounter at any moment. It's one of those great films. I'm just putting on a cup of tea. You know that. Should I do a tea or coffee? Oh, no, let's do an herbal. Let's do an herbal tea. Because I've had too many teas already. I've had like 500 today. There we go. No cake today. I do actually have an apple pie to eat for din-dins. I can't go up to the bakery today because the bakery doesn't open on a Monday. Bastards. And they always close at 2. Why close at 2? Why not stay open until 6 so people who are coming home from work go, oh, I must get a loaf of bread. Oh, I'll pick up some cakes on the way home. I would say that's the key time to stay open. I guess it's because they're awake at like 2 a.m. baking or shop. Have the baker come in, do all the baking stuff, then the sellers keep it open for a couple more hours. I would buy stuff. There we go. I've just taken off your little hood so you can hear me a bit better. You'll also hear helicopters flying past outside. You might hear the rain because it's been pissing down for 4 days straight. So I'm looking forward to us all getting a water drought warning very shortly, saying don't use your home hose pipes, we haven't got any water. So there we go. A little sad story, that one. I found this one ages ago, absolutely ages ago, but it was a little bit too similar to the Barbara Shuttleworth episode. They're not very similar. It's not too far away, but it was a lady who fell in love with a Polish soldier who couldn't return home, and so I deliberately left it a long time so they could not be next to each other, but there is similarities to others, especially the one as mentioned, which is one of the questions shortly. So I need to shut my gob up. What else is going on? It's not quite cold out. It's very autumny. All the leaves are falling down. I keep clearing off like big sackfuls of leaves off the top of the boat, because when it rains, all the leaves pour down, and then you clear them off, and the next day you've just got the boat is covered in leaves again. So it's very very wintry outside, but it's not quite cold. It's water bottle season, so I have two water bottles, my day and my night one. Oh, I'm just gonna pop on my tea. There we go. You can hear it brewing. There we go. Nice cup of peppermint before I head off to my little coffee shop, where I can happily sit. It's a bit steamy in there. I don't like that. There's no windows. There's one door, and just hurt my wrist. And there's some miserable fucker in there, keeps going, "Excuse me, can you close the door? I'm getting a bit cold, And it's like, oh, we'd love a little bit of fresh air in there, but there's always some miserable little wanker in there. I might just open the door and pretend to fix it or something, just to let some air in today. So yeah, it's water bottle season, which is good. Nothing nicer than sitting down with a hot water bottle at night and going to bed with one. Eva won't let me get into bed. I have to sit at the end of the bed, pining like a little puppy. She enjoys that. And it's not cold enough for Eva to have the fire on. So we're not allowed the fire on yet. Hence, while I write this and edit this, I wear my woolen hat and fingerless gloves, like Albert Steptoe. And to keep me warm every night, I make some nice spicy homemade kebabs. Not good kebabs for Eva. She likes the elephant leg that you have to shave, and you put like a super strength chili on it. Me, I make my own little ones here. They're really nice. I've had them for like 50 days straight now, and because it's not the meat. It's basically vegetables with a little bit of meat, like a little bit of a prosciutto, the little cubed pork, or the vegan version, and they're really nice, and just full of all the vegetables you want. They're really tasty and simple to make as well. So I do that. Just as a reminder. If you enjoyed the Daily Inch, that is currently running as the Weekly Inch on Patreon, available to everyone on all tiers. So if you're on tier 3, I can't remember how it goes. I think you get one a month, and then the higher up tier, you get, I can't remember what it goes. But if you're the highest tier, you get it weekly for 8 weeks in a run. There's eight in a season. If you're on the $3 tier, then I think you get one. I can't remember. But if so far, as time of recording, you've missed an episode called Emergency Boobies, Ghost Yobs, and Mr. Fanny Face Fungus. There you go. All highbrow stuff. So there we go. So if you want to be part of that, join Patreon. Lots of goodies. Even someone who joined the other day said, it's nice coming on my Patreon because there's a lot of original content. No disrespect to some podcasters, but they just churn out the same shite. Or they don't do that much. Whereas I try and give you something original and different. And there's stuff that there's a lot of stuff, a lot of crime scene photos that I do not share anywhere else. So Patreon is the only place you will find it. It doesn't go on my blogs, doesn't go on social media. So yeah, it's a good place to hide it out. Here's a thank you to new patrons, supporters. So thank you to Leonie Butler, Mark Christie, and Sarah Journo. So thank you, Leonie, Mark, and Sarah. Thank you very much for becoming Patreon subscribers. And of course, thank you to everyone who becomes a recurring Patreon subscriber. Thank you for that. Patreon, do not tell us when you resubscribe at all. So it's good, but sometimes they keep thing details from us and we just go, it's not fully thought out. I don't think they speak to the content providers, us, to ask us what we want. I think they just do their own thing. And it's a nice system, and you can get, you know, it's a lot of people enjoy it, and it's a nice way to kind of not only to support the people who make your podcast, but also you can contact us direct, you know.
it's difficult on to kind of deal to communicate with everyone on social media because there's so many platforms and it's really confusing and there's too many people asking questions, and quite often I try and answer everyone but it can be a real nightmare. Whereas Patreon, it's nice and simple and it's direct. You can message me direct, which is good. Thank you to some people who've left donations to support Murder Mile. Thank you very much. You can support the show in multiple ways. You can be a Patreon subscriber, which you get goodies. If you don't want to do that, you can do a one-off donation either through the supporter link or the donations page. Or a really great way is just to leave a five-star review, a nice five-star review of Murder Mile on whatever platform you listen to, and to share it with your friends. That's kind of key. That's a really important one. So a thank you to Big Old Bob, who sent a donation via the supporter link. Thank you, Big Old Bob. Whose initials there is Bob, Big Old Bob, Bob. And another one called Anonymous. Either that's the group, or it's someone who wants to be anonymous, or maybe their name is Anonymous. They left a donation via the Murder Mile website using the donation click button. Click, click. That wasn't even words. Right. Let's use some quiz questions. Of course, don't forget, I haven't edited this episode yet, so some of these may get edited out, so you might not be able to get 10 out of 10, because there might not be 10 things. And I don't edit Extra Mile deliberately. I deliberately don't edit it. Even if there's a mistake, even if I make a big mistake here, I don't edit it. So, that would be edited out, but it won't be. So, let's do some questions and we'll do some answers to them shortly. Question number one. What was the nickname of Gladys's son? I've done it again. All the way through, I kept getting annoyed at myself because I'd written Gladys, and because it's Gladys's, I'd put the comma in the wrong place. So it was actually Gladys. Oh, fucking idiot. I had to go and repair all those halfway through. Otherwise, I couldn't get through them. Right. What was the nickname of Gladys's son? Question number two. What was the name of the three murders we've covered on Murder Mile which happened near or on Lover's Walk? Good time to start. I've done this. The rain's about to start kicking down. And someone across here is using an angle grinder on their boat. Ah, joy. Question number three. What was Gladys's full birth name? Question number four. What was the name of Gladys's aunt and uncle? The ones who she stayed with. Ooh, got burpees. Question number five. What part of London did her mother live in with her new husband? A new husband. I hiccuped as I said the last word. Question number six. Gladys was in the Women's Transport Service, but what was it originally called? Question number seven. Gladys worked on three coasts as an ambulance driver, as far as we know. What were those three coasts? Question number eight. How much had marriage rates increased by in 1939? Question number eight. How much had marriage rates increased by in 1939? See, I re-said it and it still was shit. How much had marriage rates increased by in 1939? There we go. Question number nine. It is said how many men went into exile and formed as the first Polish Corps? And question number 10, what was the address of where Gladys was billeted in Cooper? So there we go. I'm going to do some extra stuff. And then, let's double check we're still recording. And then we'll do the answers to the questions shortly. Unless, of course, I've edited them out. Whew, let's see how this peppermint tea is. Can't beat a peppermint tea. Yeah, nice. And then I go to my little coffee shop in a bit and they do a nice thick hot chocolate. Nice. Right. This was one of these cases where I already did the kind of research in advance to get some. What I've started doing now is finding a file, going, okay, the file's there, that's good. And then before I go into the archives, I do a little bit of research and just build a tiny little biography around the people and the events so I can just get an idea before I go in too blind, but not cover everything. And as often happens with inquest files, when it's things like that are a bit of a case closed, the inquest file is literally non-existent. So there wasn't much in the file that I didn't already know in advance. I was hoping there'd be like little biographies in there, but there wasn't much. So I had to build as much as I could out of this. The same thing happened with the lady who tried to murder her twin sons by gassing them in the oven. That inquest file was 2 pages. This one was about 5. Ronald Severin Curris. His death certificate says that he was 28, but some people said he was 32. We know that he was a Polish officer, a second lieutenant in the 1st Battalion of the Polish Army Corps. We know his details because we've got his Polish Army identification card. We pretty much don't know very much about him. Either of these people, Gladys and Ronnie, they pretty much didn't say much about them. It's likely that he was conscripted. Given his age, he was not of a high rank. He was 28, although some people say 32. Not of a high rank, so it's likely he was conscripted at the start of the war. Second lieutenant is not particularly high. What are we going to do with this? We don't know much about him. We don't know much about his family. It's suggested that he had a wife and kids, but we don't know that whether he had a wife and kids. He might not have done. He could have been entirely by himself. We know that he couldn't return home, as many of the Polish soldiers couldn't. Their country was a massive war zone at that point. It would be unsafe for them to go home. It was kind of in the hands of different kind of armies. So even afterwards, after the war was over, it was, you know, with Poland being ripped apart by kind of the Allies and the Russians, it was kind of like, even after that point, which if you go back to the Polish super spy, I can't remember, and Christina Skarbek. We go back to that episode, or the Countessa episode. They're both kind of amazing kind of Polish figures in kind of wartime history who couldn't go back home. So if you want to know more, kind of dive into those stories. But as you can see, it's kind of difficult for him. We don't really know much about his life. We don't know about his family. We know that he didn't enjoy being in Cooper, even though it seems to be a very nice place and everyone made him feel very welcome. He definitely wanted to go back home, but he was clearly very smitten with Gladys. She was a nurse / ambulance driver. So this is the days. It was really kind of the Vietnam War that kind of made the ambulance service, or kind of what we had, realized that kind of the value of having paramedics on scene, having people on site who have expert knowledge about, you know, trauma and things like that on site, was more beneficial than having someone with basic first aid skills who can drive, go out and pick up a person and then drive them back. Because actually that the time between going out and coming back is kind of crucial. So at this point, Gladys was, it was said that she was a nurse and she was an ambulance driver, so we're not quite too sure up to what level. We don't know much about her past either, so we don't know whether she'd already trained as a nurse prior. Everyone said that she was an expert driver in cars and motorbikes, but that may have been something, given the era, it's kind of more likely that this was something that she learned to do as part of her war service, as opposed to being an expert motorcyclist prior. But you never know. We really don't know. I've searched, I've tried to dive into her past. There's almost nothing out there about what she did prior to this. We also don't know much about her husband or her son. The problem is Wilson is such a familiar name, as is her original name. Which is one of the questions. You're welcome. I didn't give it away then. So yeah, it's really hard to pin down. Gladys was also a popular name as well. And because the press, her death certificate and the inquest records also list her age as different as well. So it's anywhere between 30 and 50, even on official documents. So this is why it's a nightmare to research who she was. To be honest, we will never know. June 1942, so a couple of months before, we know that she stopped being She stopped working out of Cooper and she returned back to London. We really don't know too much about that. Could have been that maybe her son was coming back, maybe her husband, if they were even still together. That we don't know either. It's interesting. We'll get to her the final passage in her diary shortly. But she doesn't mention her husband in that, but she does mention her son. So whether her and her husband had split by that point, whether he had died, we don't know. It's everything is so vague in this. So do you know, she may not have been having an affair. Maybe she was a widower, or maybe her husband was missing in action. We don't know. We just don't know. So it's all really vague. It really is. But we do know that she'd applied to the Transport Corps, as they were called, also known as the Transport Ministry. There's so many names for different things. And she was meant to start her new job in Leeds Monday, the 31st of August, 1942. So a couple of days before she was killed. What's that down there? It's a bit of rug. I got a bit of rug rocking up. What else we got? As mentioned in the episode, Ronald had taken 72 hours leave. So with, as mentioned in the episode to do with the guys who killed the captain in the alley in Soho. I did that, I think it was like episode 185 or something. You're given a leave pass, and a leave pass isn't just, here you go, here's 42 hours, fuck off and do whatever you like. A leave pass is, you leave here at this set time, you take this train, you go to this place, this is where you stay, and then you return at this point. So literally any policeman can approach a soldier and say, why aren't you in your barracks? And he can go, I'm on leave. And go, do you have a leave pass? Yes, here is the leave pass. And it will say where they are and what they're meant to be doing and when they're meant to be back. And if you're not doing what your leave pass states, you're in the shit. It was just a kind of a good way of making sure that people didn't go AWOL, because that was the real problem that they had, was people just, you know, If you're in a war zone, you're seeing horrible things, and then suddenly someone goes, here you go, piss off for 3 days. You get drunk, you have a bit of fun, and you think to yourself, do I really want to go back? Could this be the last time that I'll be with my pals and stuff like that? So, yeah, it's you can understand why. So, yeah, Ronald didn't go back on the... I think he was due back on the Sunday. So he went AWOL. Or as they very nicely, all of his comrades called it, they said he was taking French leave, which means going AWOL. As you can see, British soldiers don't have a lot of respect for the French soldiers or Italian. we don't need to go into all the Italian soldier jokes. There's enough of them out there. although I think we all know enough Italian soldier jokes. I'm sure they're very good at what they do. They just don't have a good reputation in Britain. Going AWOL may sound kind of, he'll get a slap on the wrist. But don't forget, in 1939, when the war was about to begin, they were emptying the prisons, not just for spies, but they were emptying them for deserters. They knew there were going to be a lot of people who didn't want to conscript. It was your duty to fight for your country in whatever way the kind of the government said. But if you went AWOL, that was considered really, really bad. Well, we mentioned that in the captain episode 185, I think that was. So you could get anywhere between 2 to 10 years in prison, depending on whether you went AWOL or whether you were a deserter, which is a lot considering the fact that they needed a lot of soldiers. Some soldiers during World War One were shot for being deserters, i.e. going AWOL. Some were given death sentences in World War Two, but these were never undertaken. They ended up being kind of life in prison. But this would be going AWOL and then assaulting a senior officer, which was something really, really serious. The boarding house, I'll put some pictures up of 13 Coliseum Terrace. It's literally at the back of Regent's Park and Baker Street. It's right next to the home of William Raven, who is the, if you go to the William Raven episode, it literally is around the corner from that. It's nice now we've got hundreds of episodes to kind of go through, that all of these stories now are kind of coming to the point now where what I dreamed of at the start was all these places crossing over each other and kind of buildings next to each other, and you can start seeing that all of these different buildings and places are overlapping, and there's murder on every street in every building. So you just got to dig deep and find it. So they both had diaries. In Ronald's diary, As I was going through, I started editing it down, and I realised I needed to make his diary nice and simple. But this is the full version. Well, this is the full version. Unfortunately, only one page exists, and we know it carried on. It was really annoying. So he wrote, to make things easier, I inform you that we both spent 10 days at Coliseum Terrace 13. We are absolutely two broken people. She has a trouble with MTO, which is the Ministry of Transport that she was going to work for. We are finished with money to stay in a hotel. That's that. She give up always everything for me, also her life. I didn't write about this, but one of the causes of my death. I also some tragedy which happens firstly in June. We don't know what the tragedy was. I didn't make anything wrong, but happened something to me so fantastic that nobody would believe it is true. One day I could, and that's where it ends. Really annoying. Literally ends there. So we don't know what the tragedy was that happened in June. Maybe it was her not working in Cooper anymore and having to leave away. He uses the word something fantastic to me, but it could, it might not be fantastic as in, hey, fantastic. It could be fantastic as in unbelievable. So it could be a bad thing. We don't know what happened. We don't know what the some tragedy that he talks about. So it's really vague. Her diary entry that same day in her handwriting said, to my mother, and then it's got her mother's address on there. Just in case anything happens to me today, Ronnie is still here. He should have returned yesterday, but says he cannot live without me in this awful place where his regiment is. He threatens all the time to kill himself and me. I love him, but I don't want to die. Her son's nickname there. Must contact Mr. Karras at Dawes Road. See, this is where, even though she's written a note that is basically, I'm really worried this is going to happen to me, what she's thinking about in her dying moments is of her son. So, my son must contact Mr. Karras at Dawes Road. We don't know what for. Perhaps he will buy the furniture and will, and my son will have the money. Only he must pay me on September 18th. She would be long dead by then. Of this amount, each month must be given to her son's name, as I leave everything to him. I hope everything will be all right, but Ronnie is in a terrible state about going back. We have had a wonderful leave together. Gladys. And even the final bit is regarding her son. Her son should immediately contact my friend in the city, re-allowance. That was the last words that she wrote. And that's it. We really don't know what happened. We know they made their way into the park. They were seen around 9:30 p.m. So it would have been dark by that point. Middle of June. Yeah, it would have been kind of getting kind of dusky around that point. They went into Hyde Park. They were walking around. As people do, it's kind of an open park. You can do that. The shots were heard about 11:40 p.m. Near kind of Stanhope Gate. We don't really know what they were doing there. There doesn't seem to have been a fight. No one heard any shouts or screams. She had no defensive wounds on her. It looked unlikely that she was planning to be part of a suicide pact, because she'd said to her mum, I'll be back late. But, oh no, I'll be back, but I won't be late. And she'd already packed her bag and she was getting ready to start a new job. So she was moving on. But clearly, it looks like this would have been a moment where she was going to say to him, it's over. He already knew that she was going to Leeds because she'd called him up a couple of days before he'd come down on leave. So she'd already called him to say, I'm going to be moving to Leeds and possibly to the Middle East. So he was coming down to say goodbye to her, but they clearly had a kind of a romantic time together as kind of a farewell. They were under a tree. It's described as overturned seats, but other people describe it as benches. So it's really hard to pin down exactly what it looked like. There's no crime scene photos there because they weren't dead at the time. At the time they were found, what was the? Get rid of the. The gun used was his Army Issue Service Revolver, found in his right hand. He was wearing his military uniform. Three shots had been fired from a Smith and Wesson 0.38 six-chamber revolver, number 862480, containing three live rounds and three spent cartridges. In their pockets, when her handbag was found, her diary in his pocket was found, his diary. Two PCs found them. PC Heath and PC Gillespie were on duty in Hyde Park. Don't forget, just on the north-eastern perimeter of Hyde Park, where you've got Marble Arch, that was being used as a police station. You've also got a police station right in the centre of Hyde Park, which is where PC Jack Avery came from, the guy who was murdered by the homeless man. See, all these stories coming together. Pwah! Pwah! By jingo! They heard three shots in rapid succession, two and then one. They ran in the direction of the shooting, which was 100 yards west of Stanhope Gate onto Lover's Walk. She was kind of slumped over him, so it looks like he shot her, then took her, held onto her as she was dying, kind of in his arms. Then he put the gun to his head and then blew his brains out. It looks like his shot was, he looked like he died pretty quick. But her shots weren't that accurate. Oh, I'm yawning. They were taken to St. George's Hospital, which is on Hyde Park Corner, just off Park Lane. That's not there anymore, but I think the building's still there. So they weren't too far away. They were a minute in the ambulance, if that. I mean, you could see St. George's Hospital from there, so... Yeah, but when they got there, Dr. Nichols, who was the house surgeon, determined life as extinct. I think that's it. Autopsy was done by Dr. Donald Tier. She was identified by her brother. He was identified by Captain Stefan Kopniski. Glad I didn't put that in the episode. I would have spent a little while rehearsing that one anyway. And the gun and ammo identified as property of the Polish army and was handed back to them. I think that's everything there is. Not much more to say about that. Sad story. Hope you enjoyed it. What I try to do every week is try and give you something different. I know some people like listen to an episode and they go, oh, I didn't find that one sad, and it's like, you're not meant to find it sad. It's like, sad ones, I make them sad. It's like, what I try and do is, if there's a sad, like, I'll give you a sad one, then I'll give you a confusing one, then it'll be a mystery one, then it'll be a kind of a scary one, then a funny one, and then, you know, then we'll do another sad one. So I don't, because otherwise, if you have a sad one, 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 even though the first one all seems sad, and probably the third one is probably the saddest one, it won't seem as sad because you've already had two sad ones prior to that. So I always try and balance things out, so... make everything different. Otherwise, what's the point in listening to the same episode every week? So, this is a sad one. Although, who knows? Maybe you didn't find it sad. Who knows? Question. Okay, let's do the quiz questions. You can tell I'm getting tired now. I've run out of steam. I've run out of steam already. Maybe I just want my hot chocolate. What time is it? What time is love? Oh, boat coming in. Oh, 10 to 2. Good. Boat coming in. Who is it? Boat with... How much shit have you got on your roof? So many boats with shit on their roof. Just shit pallets. Crap. There you go. Boat's going too fast, and my boat's kind of banging against the side. Full of shit. The thing is, when you're on your boat, you need to get to front and back at any point, because you never know when you're going to be on whatever sides of the boat. Oh, they've got a doggy. Well, that's all right then. I will let them off. They've got a nice doggy. But you've got to be able to get from one side to the other at any point. And if your roof is full of shit, you can't do that. So some people don't think. Anyway, they've got a doggy, so that's all right. Question number one. What was the nickname of Gladys's son? It was Budge. We don't know what he means. We don't know whether it's an abbreviation of his name or whether it's short for Budgie. We just know he's called Budge. Question number two. Name any of the three murders we've covered on or near Lover's Walk. They were The Bloody Butler, which is the two-parter we did, Ruby Bolton, which is the two-parter on The Bearded Man, and Julia Mangan and Robert Williams, which was in London at Midnight, the one which happened on Lover's Walk, literally about 100 feet away from this part. Question number three, what was Gladys's full birth name? It was Gladys Maud Pearson. Question number four, what was the name of Gladys's aunt and uncle? If you're royalist, you should have got this. It was Uncle William and Auntie Kate.
Ooh, lovely Princess Kate,
says Police Constable Arsenal Guinness. Almost Police Constable Arsenal Guinness's birthday soon, so everyone get your Guinnesses ready. Question number five. What part of London did Gladys's mother live in with her new husband? It was Baron's Court. Question number six. Gladys was in the Women's Transport Service, but what was it originally called? It was originally called the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry, also known as Fannies. That's why I couldn't put that in the episode, because I knew I wouldn't be able to make it through the episode giggling away at the fact that it was called Fannies, and I have to keep referring to Gladys as one of the Fannies. So I didn't do that. I was a good boy. I was a brave boy. I didn't put in something deliberately silly. Question number seven. Gladys possibly worked on three coasts as an ambulance driver, but what three coasts? North France, Norway, and West Scotland. Question number eight. How much had marriage rates increased by in 1939? See, I did that properly then. It was 250%. And don't forget, that was not a full year. So it was really, the war was declared in September. Even though there were mutterings of it for a couple of years prior, it was kind of, that was when it really kicked off. So it's kind of the bulk of those marriages were the end of 1939. A lot of this information we also got from ring shops. Apparently, the amount of people who went out and bought wedding rings went through the roof. It really did. Question number nine. It is said how many men went into exile and formed the first Polish corps? According to data, it was 80,000. And question number 10. What was the address of where Gladys was billeted in Cooper? Good luck to anyone who got this one. It was Lodge 19 at 72 Bonnygate, which is a building which is still there today. 20 helicopter flying over. It was a Masonic Lodge. So there we go. I think that's me done. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me waffle on at the end. Waffle, 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 waffle. The king of waffle. Anyway, that's me done. It hasn't started pissing down now. I'm going to take a little tiny walk. Walk up to the shop. Drop off a couple of mugs, which are going out to some new Patreon subscribers enlisted or conscripted into the Murder Mile army. So there we go. They're going to get some nice Murder Mile mugs of goodies. And then I'm going to have my hot chocolate. And then it's good because the cafe shuts at 5 o'clock, which is great. So at 5 o'clock, I can't work any time beyond that. They're like, okay, piss off now. And I'm like, brilliant. I'm going to go to Tesco's tonight and buy some more lovely stuff. Brilliant. Oh. Anyway, my life is that exciting. I'm going to get Eva some Alka-Seltzer because she's run out. She gets through about 30 packs a day. She's just constantly hungover. But her way to get through the hangover is just to keep drinking. Keep drinking, keep boozing. Therefore, the second she gets what she calls a bastard behind the right eye, she starts necking the booze again. Yeah. It's amazing. You watch her on TV and films and she looks so composed. But it's me holding her up. Me holding her up and working her jaw to make it look like she's moving, but really she's unconscious. She really is. Beautiful, but unconscious. Anyway, that's me done for the day. Well, not for the day, because I've still got to edit this, which will be 2.5 days of editing. Oh, joy, Michael. So, I hope you enjoy it. Have yourself a good day, folks. Stay safe. Be good. Lots of love.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.